Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's a midterm election year. No major political races to be decided tonight. What? Wait, what? What about New York City, the mayor? What about in Boston, the mayor? What about this controversial ballot proposition about casinos in New York and others, other props in New York? There is much to talk about on this election day, and one of the interesting propositions involves raising the mandatory retirement ages for judges in New York. Another deals with land disputes and mining in the Adirondacks and casinos. It's ballot propositions in the headlines today. Stuff going on in Massachusetts, a casino vote there in Palmer. Voters will decide whether Mohegan Sun can move forward with its bid to secure the single Western Massachusetts casino license. Of course, the final say belongs to the Massachusetts Gaming Commission. Lots to do and lots to talk about today. And boy, are we lucky. Jimmy Vielkind is here. Jimmy is, he has a new job. And we'll talk about that in a minute. It's a great opportunity. The number for you to call if you want to talk politics today, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. That's our number. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Jimmy, welcome to the show.
Ray, pleasure to be here.
Okay, so for a long time, you've been on the Capitol beat for the Times Union, and before that with the Observer.
The New York Observer, that's
right. The Observer, correct. And now you're in a new place, but in the same place in many ways.
That's right. I'm now covering the same types of stories for Capital New York. It's a three-year-old website based in New York City that was recently bought by the same parent company as Politico. Mm-hmm. So it's an all-digital effort for now, and we're really focusing on state government as well as New York City government and politics and the media, and hoping to replicate the Politico model here in the Empire State.
And it's a pretty great website, and if you go to the website, you can see Jimmy wearing a hat, which I think is very interesting. Jimmy, you tweet often. Early and often, Jimmy tweets. And one of the funny ones today was, Jimmy said, I'm spending the day eating chocolate-covered peanuts. It's a tradition. Tell us about that tradition.
Well, it's just something that my mother said she always remembered when she was younger on election day. So since I've gotten old enough to have the pocket money to purchase them, you know, it's one of the great parts of disposable income is you can buy candy whenever you want.
Well, good for you.
Since I don't trick-or-treat anymore, this is my chance to have some false sweets.
The trick there is, and we live in the same town, the trick is to buy two bags too many for the trick-or-treaters, and then you have it around the house. So we talked about this a little bit this morning on the roundtable, and Mike Spain, I recall, got this call. I think somebody else on the panel this morning got the call. Governor Cuomo made the call.
Yeah, Governor Cuomo made the call. So the governor has been pushing for Proposal 1, which probably is the biggest ball in the air on the statewide scale for both the governor and for people who follow the state of our politics, mm-hmm. Because it would authorize up to 7 full-fledged Las Vegas-style casinos here in the Empire State, in addition, of course, to the Indian-run gaming centers we have and to the slot parlors, which we call racinos, that are attached to some of the harness tracks at Vernon Downs, at Tioga, and, of course, up in Saratoga, in our neck of the woods here in the Capital Region. And so Governor Cuomo pushed for this. This was his idea. He negotiated the parameters of this casino development with legislative leaders. But he had not up until now really been proactive in a push.
Nobody has until the last couple of weeks.
That's right. So there's a coalition of casinos as well as some of the major labor unions and the state's business council, which was pushing for this, was making the argument publicly for this, had been funding advertisements both in the mail. I know we've gotten 3 of them in my house, as well as on radio and television. You know, arguing for casinos. But Cuomo, in this robotic call on Monday, really engaged personally in a way that was not perhaps expected and fairly rare.
But it is legal, correct? There was some question at some point about, well, gosh, is this even legal? But it's a legal thing to do.
Yes, it would seem so. And this PAC has said that it paid for the robocall, though it would not release many details on it. Governor Cuomo is not allowed to use state resources to advocate for a ballot proposition.
But no state resources that you know of. No,
we don't own his beautiful voice. You know?
There you go. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. I mentioned New York City at the outset. It seems to be a bit of a landslide in the making for de Blasio. And interesting that a spot on the map that won't get casinos, at least initially, mm-hmm. is going to play an interesting role in whether upstate gets them as of tomorrow morning. We'll know.
Absolutely. And that's one of the big things that people are scrutinizing and wondering about as voters go to the polls today. They're open until 9 o'clock, so you haven't voted. You can still get to your polling place.
Remember, the propositions
vote.
Are on the back. We've heard that a lot.
That's right. The propositions on the back of your paper ballot. You know, I'm sad I can't do the lever click like I grew up
I
loving.
Miss that as well.
But alas. And so... You know, turnout. You always think about turnout. Who's going to come to the polls? So there's one line of thinking that says that this mayor's race is such a blowout, according to several public polls, one of which I think showed de Blasio with close to a 50-point lead as recently as this week, is that voters in New York City are going to think, well, why bother? Especially
right.
if you're a Democrat, if you're someone who's inclined to support Bill
dunk.
De Blasio,
yeah.
why bother to go in the polls? Why bother to wait in line, take time off of work? You know, it's a semi-nice day out. We're only going to have a few more this year.
Yeah.
So why bother? And that may hurt the turnout. The other question is, even if you vote in a race, and are you going to move on to the casino question? As you point out, it's on the back of the ballot.
Yep.
In New York City, the type is very small. It's going to be tough to read, tough to see. It's the first of six. So studies have shown, and not even studies, but the last time in 2009, there were ballot referenda on the ballot. There was a significant drop-off between voters who voted for major offices and those who voted for these referenda.
So the ones who wouldn't flip over the paper. And it
right.
brings the question about paper ballots, and I was harping about this off the air this morning,
yeah.
how much I dislike the paper ballots. There has to be a better way at some point. Maybe there's a happy medium between the old lever machines and paper ballots. It seems like an extra two or three steps.
Yeah. Well, of course, we got them after Florida 2000.
Yep, absolutely.
Some of us remember more fondly than others. And you could make the argument that New York's system wasn't so broken, but it got fixed anyway.
Yeah.
But for people who are disabled and they have trouble working these lever machines, they did not have the right to individually vote. And with the new system, they have those rights. And that's something that advocates have pointed to and touted.
Well, there's some other props, but we'll talk about them in a moment. Let's go to the phones at 1-800-348-2551. And Marta in Poughkeepsie, you're on with Jimmy Vielkind.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good.
Jimmy, too. I'm very antagonized about what's been going on with this election cycle. I'm in Poughkeepsie. And right now we have a Board of Elections Democratic Commissioner. She's on like 46 felony charges and 48 misdemeanor charges for fraudulent election stuff. She's never had to like leave work. She's been overseeing this whole process. Her husband tried to run against somebody that's representing my ward and actually took that poor woman to court to try to prove she was committing fraud. And fortunately, the judge found in her favor, and she's actually on the ballot today. But, you know, stuff like that just on the local level. You were talking about the paper. You know, you've got to have really good eyes to fit the ink into that little oval, and it's very hard to see it. And the writing, like you said, on the back of the form, the propositions, very small writing, very complicated sounding ideas that we've had very little coverage of in the newspaper. I read the paper every day. And, you know, I just feel like we really barely, if we even have fair elections, barely have them, because there's a lot of purging of the rolls going on. There's a lot of discouragement about getting out to vote. What's the point? And I have, in Dutchess County, we have 17 people running for county legislature unopposed. And even for my legislative district, the woman that's running, they've been pretending she's running unopposed. She's not. The person she beat in the primary is still on the ballot, and there's like virtually no coverage of that. You know, it's just like you have to really be aware and paying attention to get anything that informs the voter.
Jimmy?
Well, that is of course a big struggle, and it's something that newspapers around the state, in the country, not just in Poughkeepsie, that are dealing with that. But you bring up an interesting point, which I've been thinking about with the context of these big, you know, quote unquote sexy statewide ballot initiatives that have gotten a little bit more attention, just because they do apply more broadly than some of the local races, and that is, what is going to get people to the polls for these statewide races? It's going to be places where, as you say, there are 17 county legislators on the ballot in Dutchess County, 17 running unopposed, the entire county legislature on the ballot. It's going to be these little races that actually get people to the polls, that actually motivate people to the polls, or don't motivate people to come to the polls. And so that's one of the interesting things about having these referenda in a so-called off-election year and doing it when there is no state legislative elections, like there would be in an even year when the governor is not on the ballot or the president is not on the ballot. And so we're going to see what the effects of that are. And certainly, I don't think there will be people who come to vote for these propositions and then also vote for their local races. I think it's going to be exactly the reverse.
What do you mean?
I think that people are going to come to the polls to either vote for that great guy, Ray Graff, for mayor, or vote against that bum, Ray Graff, because he can't be trusted in City Hall.
Right.
And then that's going to drive the turnout, and then the ballot propositions will be secondary. So, Marta, I'm glad that you're so engaged, and hopefully you can urge your friends and neighbors to be the same way.
Yeah, I do try.
Marta, thanks a lot for the call.
Thanks for taking it.
1-800-348-2551 is the number. Capital New York senior reporter Jimmy Vielkind is here. I guess that's a problem in a state where Democrats are now, almost monolithically in power. Some of these other things, propositions, can't generate enough because there's nobody running against the Democrats.
Well, that's the thing. And it's not just the Democrats, right? For example, in Half Moon, a town in southern Saratoga County, you have Republicans up for election this year in the shadow of a scandal. The FBI has charged the former supervisor. And in Half Moon, I think the statistic is that there has never been an elected Democrat ever. And there are other places like Green Island, a little village and town just north of us in Albany here, where the Democratic machine is very, very strong. And so when you have this sort of monolithic grip on power, it does disincentivize participation because people think, well, why matter? Why does it bother? And I think that that's sad. I think that people should exercise their civic rights and should band together if they do feel differently, whether or not it's a partisan thing or whether it's an issue of local prominence that relates to a particular ruling party or ruling faction.
1-800-348-2551 is our number. Jimmy Vielkind is here, and we'll be back with your calls coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Performance Automotive Pittsfield, a European and Saab service center serving Western Massachusetts and the greater Albany market for 25 years. Saab, it's not just a car, it's a passion. SaabPerformance.com. Buttermilk Falls Inn, Milton, a 75-acre Hudson Riverfront resort with lodging, a farm-to-table restaurant and spa, now booking holiday corporate and private parties and more. ButtermilkFallsIn.com. Healthy Living Market and Cafe, now accepting pre-orders for Thanksgiving pies and locally farm-raised turkeys. HealthyLivingMarket.com. And Don Muller Gallery, Northampton, Massachusetts, specializing in jewelry, custom designs, handcrafted glass, and gifts by American artists since 1978. Facebook and DonMullerGallery.com.
One 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Jimmy Vielkind of Capital New York. It's Capital New York, right? That's the website with an A or with an O?
It's Capital New York with an AL, and then you have to spell out New York. So Capital AL New York.com.
Okay. And that is the website. And it's a good website, as I said. Jimmy wearing a fedora, worth the price of admission, which, by the way, is free. So it's pretty good. Now, we've talked about Prop 1. There is also a proposition, I think it's Prop 5, up in the Adirondacks, about a relatively small 200-acre parcel of land that this company, Nyco, wants to mine and trade essentially 1,500 acres for.
Right, and they're looking for something called wollostonite, which is a rare earth material, and these rare earth minerals are used in electronics and
magnets.
Things that people much smarter than I understand, but I certainly don't understand.
Yep.
And they think there might be some more of it in this parcel adjacent to their current operations. But like many parts of the Adirondacks, it is designated as forever wild, cannot be developed. It's part of the state forest preserve, protected by the state constitution. And the only way to do anything with it is to amend the state constitution, which therefore leads voters to be looking at this proposal. So they want the right to prospect in these 200 acres.
Right.
And they're prepared to offer 1,500 additional acres somewhere else for the forest preserve. And they say it's going to be jobs. It's going to save jobs. It's going to protect jobs in the North Country. And some environmental groups have said this is a reasonable compromise, and some have not. Some have said that this is not a good precedent to set. They have said that you're taking public land and you're putting it over for private benefit. And they've questioned the claim of the company, which is essentially that without being able to do this, the ongoing operation is threatened.
Now, as you read the news reports on this, and as the wire will tick over, what I hear is that the public up in that neck of the woods are fairly strongly in favor of this.
Right.
And as you say, some environmental groups not in favor of it.
Right.
So really the question, this is a question I posed during a break this morning. We didn't want to open up this can of worms, but I'll open it up with you. Is there an essential flaw in the system if people in, let's say, you know, Massapequa, Long Island, can weigh in on a 200-acre parcel of land in the Adirondacks that they will never, ever see? Is that an issue?
Well, you could make the case that it is. Hopefully voters, whether they be Massapequans or Massapequots, I don't know what the technical term is.
I don't know.
Whether they are educated enough about the something that does not probably affect them. But, you know, the Constitution is the Constitution. And the point of the Constitution is that the Adirondacks belong to all of us. Mm. They don't just belong to people who live near the NICO plant or the people who live in
But even people who will be out of work, let's say, and not able to live there anymore.
Theoretically, that is the claim. And interestingly enough, my colleague Scott Waldman at Capital New York has actually reported about this, but NICO has spent, I think, about $400,000 on an advertising campaign to push their case. I know that they've tried to bring journalists to write articles about this issue to try and explain it to people so that there would be some level of awareness. Because the fear is that someone who's not educated on the issue, who doesn't know anything about it, will walk into the polls, they'll see it, and they will say, yeah, they'll flip a coin, or they'll say, I don't want to. I love the birds and the trees and the forest and the Adirondacks. No. And that's really the question is what about those voters who don't have a lot of information? How will they go? As opposed to people who are nearby and who do know. They do know the issue very well, and they will vote.
Make an informed decision. 800-348-2551. And our guest today, Capital New York senior reporter Jimmy Vielkind. Paul in Port Henry is on. Paul, you're on.
Good afternoon. I've run across a discrepancy at the polls today. After I voted, I asked the poll worker why they didn't give us warn us that there were two sides of the ballot, and they said they weren't allowed to. So I called the Board of Elections, and the supervisor was rather pushy about it, but he said, that's the rules. I said, statewide? And he wouldn't answer that question. So I asked my wife, who votes in New York City, and she said the poll workers there were telling everybody to be sure to look on both sides of the ballot. And I wonder if he's just got the rule wrong or... Now, I think there are going to be a lot of people who don't vote it just because they're not aware of it.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point. When I voted earlier this morning, The nice older woman at the polls made sure to show me and know the ballot propositions are on the back. There was no push. It wasn't don't forget.
Yeah,
it was just that she showed it. She flagged it for me, etc.
The guy was very antagonistic. He says that's electioneering, and I said, I'm sorry, I don't see how it's electioneering. It's just letting people know the procedure for voting. And he was quite abrupt with it.
Well, the New York City Board of Elections did decide that workers should not be informing voters. And that it's seen as electioneering. But, you know, as you pointed out, your wife's experience, I had my experience, you had your experience.
There's no statewide policy on it?
I think that it's left to the local boards, and it's also a policy that, you know, it's difficult to enforce. These poll watchers are our neighbors, they're our friends, they're people in our community, and they're volunteering for a day.
I think that would bias the results. I mean, if it was the fact that most people in New York City did... that might affect the, and you have a higher percentage of people voting there, percentage, it might very well affect it just based on the discussion you had previously about the fact that people in this area may have a better understanding of the issues involving those rather obscure amendments, the two of them involving the Adirondacks.
Well, and as I said, to be clear, my understanding is that the New York City Board of Elections has instructed workers that they should not be reminding people to flip over the ballot.
Ironic,
so,
then.
Well, and I think there's a good case to be made either way. My understanding is that individual county elections boards could make their determination. But, you know, based on what you're saying and based on my own experience voting, even if you have a standard, even if you have something that's applied, I think it's going to be inconsistent at best.
Paul, thanks a lot for the call. But does this potentially, if the vote is extremely close, either way, does this potentially throw the result to litigation saying, hey, listen, over here, they showed us. Over here, they were not allowed to show us the other side.
Well, I think that in order for that kind of litigation to be successful or to really gain some legs, you'd have to prove a clear link or clear bias. And I think it'll be difficult to do that, just to say by showing someone the ballot, that's any kind of an indication on how to vote, right?
Well, I think it's more telling if there are specific boards of elections that say, no, you're not allowed to say that. I mean, why would you not be allowed to point out that there's more to the ballot?
Well, again, because it could be taken as an exhortation that people should be voting on these. Maybe people, of course, everyone who votes has a right to vote for everything or a right to vote for one thing. We, of course, also have the right not to vote. I would exhort people to vote.
But if you don't know it's there,
right,
then how can you vote?
But is it the obligation of the elections worker to do that? Or is it your obligation as a citizen to know that it's there?
In this very odd paper system, I think someone needs to say something.
Well, or to know that, you know, from the days that we were doing homework, the argument that, oh, you know, teacher, I didn't know there was a second side of problems on that sheet. I think it worked for me once, and then after the third grade, it didn't go.
And that's why you're where you are today. It's Jimmy Fielkind, senior reporter, CapitalNewYork.com. Margaret and Gardner. Margaret, you're on.
Oh, great. I wanted to talk about the Adirondack proposals because I did not hear anything about them before I got in there, and I was very confused, and I think I ended up splitting it yes and no, so
There's four and five, right?
Right. Number five was, as we were talking about, Margaret, that's the one dealing with the NYCO mine and allowing prospecting and some additional acreage near the mine. In exchange for adding some other acreage to the forest preserve. And Proposition 4 is a little bit convoluted. It stems from something called Township 40, which was unincorporated state land dating back to the middle of the 19th century around Racket Lake. And so I think the Racket Lake Fire Department is on this land. I think the Racket Lake Elementary School is on this land, as well as some private homes, which are fairly nice. But because this land was at one point taken back into the state forest preserve, but people were there. People had lived there for a long time, and there's a lot of there's a cloud over their title. They are having trouble getting mortgages, etc. And so this proposition essentially authorizes state courts to settle these land claims explicitly. And there had been various legal attempts to try and do this.
Well, I guess for me, my point is similar to what you guys have been saying and others have said, that the information on the judges, I've heard a lot about that, the information on the gang, blah, blah, blah. But those two, I had not heard one thing about them. And I try to stay informed. And that was very disappointing to me because I felt like, oh, I wish I knew more about this to make a decision here. But, you know, you hear a bunch of silly things or the same thing over and over again, and you don't hear that kind of information, maybe because it's local up there and not really impacting me down here. But, I want to make an informed decision.
Right. Yeah, and luckily, lots of newspapers around the state, I know the Times Union, our newspaper here in Albany, this weekend published a great voter's guide in which it explained all the ballot propositions, talked about some of the Supreme Court justice candidates who were on the ballot, and highlighted some of the more competitive local elections. So that probably is your best source of information.
All righty, then.
Margaret, thanks for the call.
All right, thanks, fellas. Bye.
Yep, bye-bye. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Jimmy Fielkind is here. He's coming down off his sugar high from his 5 hours of chocolate-covered peanuts, but he'll be going back to it as soon as he's done with the show. Jay in Worthington, you're on.
Yes, I'm calling about the Adirondack question. Although I live in Massachusetts, there's a process by which land is protected in Massachusetts. I've sold land to the State Division of Fish and Wildlife to protect it permanently through a process called the consensual taking. It's the most permanent form of protection available and requires a two-thirds vote of the legislature to change any part of it. When I sell this land to the state, I expect it will be permanently protected. I recognize that with population growth, climate change, et cetera, you know, all the balls will be up in the air at some point, but that should be further in the future. I think the land in the Adirondack, you know, being protected as forever wild means something. And to change any part of that opens the door to development all over. You know, I'm opposed to it on principle, not because I'm opposed to local control or jobs, but the way land is protected is sacrosanct. Otherwise, it's not protected. You're going to make people like me reluctant, as, you know, most people are, to sell land to government if they think the government's then going to turn it around and make it available to private industry, whether it's wind power or mining interests. I mean, I own land that has enormous potential, say, to be mined for schist or, you know, for stone. If I sell it to the state, I don't want them putting in a mine. I don't want them putting in wind towers. I'm selling this land to be protected, and that's really the sum of my – that's what I have to say.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. I mean, the other thing is you could do just hold on to it, right? Not do anything with it?
Yes, but, you know, as I'm 57 years old. I have, you know, I have ideas about land protection. I'm not opposed to it being used. I think some land is better suited to use than others.
Mm-hmm.
Some, you know, the biological assets that exist on some land should be protected. They're really not valued. I mean, say the Amazon. The Amazon is being cut off before we even know what's there and destroyed. You don't want to do that here. Even though the land here was cut off 200 years ago, it's regrown.
Yeah.
There are things that exist there that we really don't completely understand, and the fact that they exist there protects other things that we don't completely understand.
All right,
I have a farm. I have a farm. The land uphill from my farm comes, you know, everything comes downhill onto my farm. So what's uphill matters very much to me, even if I don't want to exercise my right to log it off, to mine it, or what have you.
Okay. Well, but all right, and I got to let you go here. But what if it's a good deal for the state? And I don't have a dog in this race at all.
No,
but
I understand that, Ray. I just want to make the distinction between, you know, I'm all for economic development where it's appropriate.
Okay.
In this case, not knowing much about it, it might be appropriate.
Okay.
But the first principle that's at play here is land protection itself. And once you change that dynamic, you open the door to doing it anywhere.
Yeah.
That's my concern.
Good call, Jay. Thanks a lot. Let's go over to Pauline in Rexford. You're on with the great Jimmy Vielkind.
Hi. First of all, I just want to say I kind of agree with that guy who was just on, but I'm actually calling because where I voted in Rexford, there were signs all over saying to flip your ballot. And it does seem to me, unless there's always something on the other side of a ballot, that if it is unusual, it seems like they should have to tell you. But what I really wanted to say was that I found a lot of the wording very, I thought, biased. And no matter how I felt about it, whatever issue it was, whether it was land in the Adirondacks or the judges serving till they're 70 or the casinos, it was worded in such a way that unless people had been reading both sides of the issues, it made it look like you should vote yes.
This is a great point, and Jimmy has been all over this for some time. Take it, Jim.
Well, so this was most prominent probably with, you saw, Pauline, the casino question.
Oh, yeah, that was very biased.
Right,
yes.
So you could easily ask this question, say, should the state constitution be amended to allow up to 7 casinos, the first of which to be located north of Westchester County? And that is the question. That is what
right.
You're doing. But then they say, for the legislative purposes of, job
mm-hmm.
creation, aid to education, making puppies smile, pranking apple pies in all of our ovens. And,
exactly.
So this has been, the opponents of this have really cried foul on it. And there was a man from Brooklyn named Eric Snyder who actually tried to bring a lawsuit.
Very late.
Against the Board of Elections. It was essentially ruled out of order because they say he filed it too late in the electoral process for it to be considered by the court. But in the process of doing that, the judge did affirm the right of the State Board of Elections to set the wording. And the State Board of Elections in New York is a bipartisan entity. And it did vote on this wording, which, as you say, many have criticized as being overly rosy.
Well, especially about money for education, because I'm always hearing people say, everybody's, all these people buy lottery tickets day after day, and this was supposed to help education. And yet our taxes, school taxes, keep going up across the state. And sometimes I find people asking, where is that money going? Do we really know?
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know.
They do account for it. It does boost education, but as you know,
goes to the general fund.
Yeah, money is fungible, right? So a dollar from that for education could mean a dollar that was going to education could go somewhere else.
Well, thank you for calling today. I appreciate it, Pauline.
Okay, thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Jimmy Vielkind, senior reporter, CapitalNewYork.com is here. 1-800-348-2551. Let's take one more call before the break. Rick in Lansingburg. Rick, you're on.
Hi, Jimmy. This is Rick.
Hello, Rick.
It's interesting. We've got these vested interests that are interested in their own things, and they manage to put these issues on the ballot. In half the country, the people themselves have the right to put these issues on the ballot or any issue they so choose.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's right. And actually,
legislation.
Yeah, and that is a good point, and it kind of comes to the point that this is not the tradition in New York. The ballot referendum is not the normal way we make public policy. Only to amend the state constitution do we have popular votes, and that can only be done after two successively elected state legislatures, crops of legislators, vote on the same resolution. So actually, all these issues that we're talking about now, which are on the ballot today, the discussion of them started as far back as 2011.
Yeah, officially, but I mean the discussion of casinos goes back decades.
Absolutely.
So it's really coming to a head here. Hey, Rick, we got to take a break, but thank you for a great call. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Jimmy Vielkind, our guest, and believe it or not, we hit the home stretch coming up. 20 more minutes to go.
Support for WAMC goes on the Unitarian Universalist congregations with locations in the Capital Region and beyond, welcoming families who value religious diversity, capitalregionuu.org. Unison Arts Center, New Paltz, presenting the band Matuto, performing a blend of Brazilian, bluegrass, and Americana rhythms in concert Saturday, November 8th at 8, unisonarts.org. Saratoga Health and Wellness, a fitness facility offering exercise, nutrition, personal training, and weight loss programs, saratogahealthandwellness.com. In the Blue Rock Restaurant, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, Chef Chris Ramirez creating new American cuisine and handcrafted desserts. Wine and beer from local to worldwide, live jazz Fridays, theBlueRockRestaurant.com.
Little Dap Kings for you here on Vox Pop. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Senior reporter of the Capital New York website, CapitalNewYork.com. Jimmy Vielkind is here. A busy day for you and a busier day tomorrow. And we've been talking about ballots, paper ballots. We've been talking about propositions and the democratic process in general. And nice to hear from Massachusetts today. Don't want to exclude anybody, whether you're voting today or not. Feel free to jump in at 1-800-348-2551. Back to the phones we go, and it's Sean and Troy.
Hi, Ray and Jimmy. How are you? Happy Election Day.
Thanks.
I had an interesting experience in the voting booth today. It took me three tries to actually get the optical scan reader to read my ballot, but to fill out three separate ballots. And I brought my two-year-old daughter in with me because I think it's important to instill the whole value of our democratic process and voting. And also I was slightly disenfranchised in the fact that it took, you know, three different ballot attempts to have the machine scan my ballot. But apart from that, I guess my comment today is this. I don't understand the privacy with this. Because you go to the ballot and you fill out your ballot and you go behind your little privacy area where you can fill it out. But when you slide your ballot through the machine, it's wide open for everyone to see. Having to do it three times, having to flip it over, try multiple ways, multiple directions, I'm just surprised that we don't go behind some sort of privacy screen in which no one can see the ballots when these machines have problems. So
I'm sort of surprised to hear that, Sean, because I know when I voted today, there was a little kind of like a makeshift cubby kind of thing near the scanner. So I'm surprised.
Yeah, it was.
That.
Yeah, Jimmy, when you fill out your ballot, you can go behind one of those little cubbies, but when you actually slide it into the machine in good old Troy, New York, there was no cover or anything like that.
Are there standard rules that you know of, Jimmy, that cover this?
I don't. I know that generally elections are left to the counties, and so each county is responsible for administering the processes. And the State Board of Elections, you know, talks about procedures that are set statewide and gets them there. But I would contact the County Board of Elections, Sean.
Sean, thanks a lot.
I will. Thank you, guys.
And I'll be bringing one of my daughters to the ballot box today and showing her a little bit about it. She's not two, though. I think two is pretty young to, well, no, I guess not. All right, Jack in Glensville. Jack, you're on.
Hi there.
Hello.
What you first should do when someone gets on and say, did you vote?
Did you vote?
Yes, I did.
Well, congratulations.
Well, you should do that to everybody. If they say no, we'll say, don't forget, it's open till 9 o'clock.
Okay.
Because we're promoting voting here in New York.
All right, well, you've done it.
Program.
All right, you're on with Jimmy Vilcon.
Oh, okay. Listen, I was a little surprised at the attendance when I picked up my ballot, you know, told me that make sure you turn it over, which I already knew because I do pay attention. However, what I was surprised at when I finished the front page with all the people running for election, I almost left the booth because I was so concentrated on picking the right ones that I wanted in the right party.
Yeah.
There's nothing on the ballot to say turn it over.
Well, that's a good point. Just put it on the bottom of the sheet.
Yeah.
It would be so easy.
I like it, Jack.
Why are they preventing people from reading and deciding on these propositions? Now, there's all sorts of different interests involved in those six different propositions. So it's hard to say that it's one person. However, based on the history of Cuomo,
Cuomo.
The hard, this is the governor.
Yes.
The hard-nosed politics and persuasion that when he was attorney general, he would bring a case against a company.
Right.
And I know one company that this happened to, so I can't believe it's the only one. And he would harass them with a suit.
All right. Well,
because somebody raised it.
Now, Jack, was Cuomo on the ballot today?
That was going to be my point.
He is always on the ballot.
Well, and you bring the reason.
Influence is
Cuomo.
All over well, the and, back
and,
of that ballot.
And that's why.
Now listen,
that's
Jimmy.
Why that's why
hang
I bring
on, Jack.
It up.
Hang
Jimmy,
on, hang on,
hey.
Jack. Ho, Jack, hang in there. Jimmy, go ahead.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Jack, because I absolutely agree. And a lot of people.
Oh, you
have,
do agree.
Yeah, a lot of people have
then
said.
Then why were you cut, Mokey? Go ahead.
A lot of people have noted that probably the clearest referendum on the governor, a Democrat, as you note, is this casino referendum. Something he pushed for, something he set the parameters for, and as Ray and I were talking about earlier, he did the robocall for. So I know that tomorrow in the morning, I'm going to be looking at what the results were there to see what that means for the governor's political fortunes. And there are a couple of other local races around the state where people will be looking at the same thing, particularly the county executive's race in Westchester County, where New Rochelle Mayor Noam Branson is on the ballot challenging a Republican incumbent, Rob Astorino, who has been mentioned as a possible statewide contender
in 2014. And interesting, you said today the governor didn't really say the candidate by name.
That's right. And so Governor Cuomo did vote in Mount Kisco near his girlfriend's
house,
where he votes. And he said that he supported the Democratic candidate. I took that as maybe a tea leaf, that he's not not jumping off a bridge with this Branson guy.
Yeah.
Other people who lie with the governor have said, no, you're falsely reading things into this. But we'll see what the results
Jack,
are of that
thanks
race.
A lot. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551. Yes, everyone, vote if you have to vote. Vote. Pete in Guilderland. Pete.
Hello. I just have a quick follow-up question, if Jimmy knows. On the land swap issue, the 1,500 acres that they're offering back, will that be forever wild, or is that some other classification?
I believe it should be forever wild. It should be part of the forest preserve, just like the 200 acres were.
Okay. Well, that's helpful. Thank you.
Peter, thank you very much. We appreciate the call. The number to call, 1-800-348-2551. Don't yell at us. We're just trying to get through the program. John in Saratoga. John, you're on.
Oh, hi. How you doing? I've been a resident of Saratoga for 40 years.
Okay.
And I've watched racing go from track racing go from 4 weeks to 6 weeks. I've watched the harness track turn into a video casino and all that sort of thing. And then I look at the surrounding areas, and the burning question I have about whether to accept this idea of having casino gambling is, hasn't it reached a saturation point? I mean, how many casinos can you have within a 100-mile area of where you live? And what happens, you know, if these casinos go bankrupt? What do you do with these buildings that are just, I mean, I know it's private enterprise is going to end up with these buildings, but it just seems so strange to me that the state thinks they can get that much money from the revenues of casino gambling. Have they done studies about it?
Well, of course, the state will let market bear what the market bears, and the state will get its cut. I think that's the thing. But these will be private entities. So, what's your sense, John, about Saratoga and the feeling on the street? Because, you know, the odds are pretty good that racino will be turned into a full-fledged casino. So
exactly.
What's the word among your friends and family?
Well, the interesting thing is, it depends on what demographic you're asking. If you're asking the older folk, they kind of want to not see it. If you're asking the younger groups, when I say the younger groups, those below the 60-year mark in their life,
yeah,
they're kind of looking forward to it. They think that there's going to be a whole difference. And what I'm witnessing up there, we've got hotels being built that I'm saying to myself, where are these hotels going? I mean, and who's going to occupy all these rooms? I mean, during the racing season, I don't see that there's an issue of having enough rooms for the horse season. Now they're building hotels one after another. Every corner you turn around, there's another hotel going up. There's another hotel going up. 157 units, 180-unit hotels. I'm saying, somebody must know something's going on.
Or somebody hopes that the
vote... That it does happen, and it's going to happen in Saratoga. Yeah. And, you know, that would be the likely choice because it's already there. So you get that element. But, when you look at the things they build out in Vegas, I mean, I can get on an airplane in Albany for like $200 or whatever. They give you these ridiculous rates. And I can stay in these phenomenal hotels in Vegas and gamble. Not that I go out there to gamble. I don't even go out there because I think it's a zoo.
Okay.
But, you know, the point I'm getting at is that I still don't see the economic picture. I mean, I still have not been able to readily accept the fact that this is going to reduce my taxes or something to that effect, going to help educate our children or something to that effect. I don't know what studies they've used to determine that more gambling is needed.
Well, that's a great call. Thanks, John. I didn't see a lot of negative advertising leading up to this, Jim.
It's true. The opponents of casinos have been kind of a loose, odd coalition of misfits that hasn't had the funding that the forces of pro-gambling have had. It was very interesting. Last week, there was a press conference in New York City that featured two really liberal legislators, a guy named Danny O'Donnell, state assemblyman from the Upper West Side, and Liz Krueger, state senator from the Upper West Side, along with state Conservative Party chairman Mike Long. And now Mike Long has gone toe-to-toe. They've fought over everything with these two, and they're both united in opposition to casinos.
Okay.
So, you know, the figure that we've seen and the economic impact that we've seen has not really been from the state. The coalition that has been pushing for casinos keeps citing this figure of $1.2 billion that it says New Yorkers gamble are out of state, and that they think some of that money could be brought back. If you could go gamble at Saratoga, you wouldn't go to Foxwoods necessarily. And then the other figure they cite is 10,000 jobs, which is an estimate based on construction and permanent jobs, which... You know, I don't know if it's been terribly vetted, but, you know, I think the big argument is that it's not government money, that none of this is all going to be private capital, people who think that they can make an investment on casinos and think that they can make a bang for their buck. And so the governor and other casino advocates and government's posture is, we'll let them.
Yeah.
The fear, though, is that if these things get built and if they become centers of employment, you'll see calls, if they fall in hard times, to have the government get involved and take it over. And I think that people see that as a logical and perhaps an inevitable thing, and they fear it, and they don't want to start. They don't want to take steps down a road that they think will lead to a bad place.
Well, you know, it's funny, and we'll get right back to the phones. the way the deals have been done as far as exclusivity with the Native American casinos, it would seem that, okay, we'll have two in the Catskills. One is pretty much earmarked for Saratoga.
In the capital region.
So those hotels, they're banking on a yes vote today.
I would have to imagine they're in favor of it.
Let's go to Caroline in Albany. Caroline.
Hi.
Hello.
I just want to thank you for discussing the propositions first. I think it's really needed, quite frankly. I wanted to talk about Proposition 4 and explain just very fractionally what happened. Actually, people paid their taxes up there. The land was owned privately, and by mistake, around 1877, the state sold that land at tax sales, admitted, and in fact, it's in writing in their 1899 book that they published, this is the state admitting it, that they had made a mistake. But once you make that mistake, New York state law doesn't allow you to change it without a court decision or a constitutional amendment. Mm. And this amendment and the implementing legislation that went with it was worked on for 10 years with DEC and the AG's office and our legislators and county and town officials. And right now we're supported by six environmental groups. The frustration for us, because there's just a small number of us, and I am personally involved.
Okay.
Is that it's hard to get the message out, and although the media has been great, on the other hand, because it hasn't had the controversy that a lot of things have, then people have said, well, it's not controversial, so it doesn't make a lot of news.
Yeah. Well, Jimmy, you want to weigh in on that?
Well, Caroline, I think you're absolutely right, and thank you for the context that, you gave. I knew the broad parameters, but thank you for bringing out the specifics. And we'll just have to see how the vote falls.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Caroline, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go get a couple of more in here. And let's go to Carrie in Barrytown. You're up.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, this is Carrie. And I am calling because on Proposition 5, as I read it on my ballot this morning, and as I understood it to be, it is 200 acres being given to the mining company in exchange for at least as many acres. I don't know where this 1,500 acres that everyone's talking about is coming from, because it doesn't say anywhere in the proposition that there's 1,500 acres.
I think, I think that the company has talked about that. I think that they have even identified.
But it's not in the proposition. The proposition actually states at least the same amount of acreage, which means 200 acres or more.
Okay.
So it's not 200 versus 1,500. It's 200 or at least 200.
Okay. Right.
And so it was some kind of advertising thing on their part to make people actually believe it was 1,500 acres. But unless that's in writing, it's nothing. So I want that to be corrected on the record so that people know what they're actually voting for. Because when you go in there, you don't necessarily read the proposition on the ballot. You go by what people on the radio are saying. So, and I heard that, as soon as I heard that you said that, I was like, I better call him.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot. It's widely reported, and Scott Waldman and others have reported that, but hey.
But it's wrong. If you read the actual language on the ballot proposition,
Okay, well,
it doesn't say that.
Carrie, thanks for doing this.
I encourage your reader, your listeners to read all of their propositions carefully.
Very good. And we'll have to leave it there. Let's see. Do we have time for one more? Okay, tell you what, Jimmy, we only have about a minute here. Pick five, one, or three. Go ahead.
Let's do one.
Here we go. Line one. Jim in Queensbury, you're up. Last call. You got about a half a minute.
All right. Can you hear me all right?
Yep.
Okay. The beginning of the conversation when you asked about, you know, why is someone in Long Island voting about the Adirondacks, and I guess it seems to me that the people that created the Adirondack Park decided that it should be a state park with serving a statewide interest.
Yeah.
And they made it part of the Constitution rather than just a just a land allocation of some sort to ensure that the only way it could be changed was to have agreement throughout the whole state.
All right.
So I think that's probably why that was done. I'll skip ahead to the mining company one. There's something in that proposition that says that after they mine the land, they'll return it back also. So they're not only making an exchange of land, but they're also going to return the 200 acres back when they're done with it. But in its original condition, it says, which I don't know how you can remove something from the land and then return it to the original in the original condition.
All right, Jim, we're going to have to leave it there, and we appreciate it very much. Jimmy Vielkind, we appreciate your being here. We'll see you in the morning for the roundtable, and we'll hash it out how everything went. CapitalNewYork.com. Jimmy, thanks.
Pleasure, Ray.
Support comes from East Heaven Hot Tubs and Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering private hot tub rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs, massage for couples and individuals, eastheaven.com for reservations. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management and retirement planning for individuals and businesses, nbtbank.com. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974, preservenys.org. And Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring mulch and burlap to protect from deer and rabbits. Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5, Sunday, 9 to 4, a gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com. Thanks to Zach, the engineer at the controls. Bruce Herbach answered the phones. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. We're out of time. Oh, we're done.